Live from the ESPN Pensacola studios, it's The Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You could be a part of today's show by texting or calling at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
It is a football Friday here at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Welcome into the Glass Half Full. I am Jordan Glass. If you want to be a part of today's show, hey, it's easy to do, 850-623-1330. Text or call. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Lots to talk about on today's show. Lots of great games happening this weekend in college and NFL, including your very own UWF Argos back at home. We will take a look at that game against North Greenville a little later on in the show. But now I want to go back to last night, to that phenomenal Thursday night game we had between the Bengals and the Ravens. I don't think you could have asked for – and that might have actually been the best Thursday night game we've had all season, right? Like, it was a well-played game. I mean, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, all of those guys had phenomenal games, right? And it was really – a fun game. And I mean, you look at the numbers. Lamar Jackson, 25-33 for 290 and four tutties. Joe Burrow, 34-56, 428 yards and four tutties. Both quarterbacks just played out of their mind. And you look at the 428 yards that Joe Burrow passed for, 268 of those went to Ja'Marr Chase alone. Ja'Marr had 268 yards and three touchdowns for the Bengals. I mean, this was a game. Look, if you didn't like, if you like defense, the first half was for you. If you like offense, the second half was for you. Everybody was happy coming away from this game, except for maybe actual Bengal fans, because they did, in fact, lose the game 35-34. And we'll talk about why they decided to go for two in a minute. But this is actually the first time, and I would actually take this as a good sign if I'm the Ravens. And I know I keep bringing this up. You're probably tired of hearing this stat or this factoid, whatever you want to call it, because I bring it up a lot. I always say that the Ravens are undefeated. They win games when Derrick Henry rushes for over 100 yards. But guess what? I can't say that anymore. I can't say that anymore. Derrick Henry held to just 68 yards rushing last night in the game. Now, he did have a couple of big runs to pick up some first downs in the second half, so he was still there to help, still had a presence in that second half when the Ravens came back from that 14-point deficit down 21-7. But it just, he didn't have 100 yards. I honestly thought he would, right? Because when you look at it, the Bengals are giving up about 130 yards rushing a game. You got a guy in Derrick Henry going up against the defense that's allowing that much in the rushing game, then yeah, you odds are pretty good he's going to have 100 yards rushing. Odds are good he can have more than that. I even said yesterday on the show, closing it out, when I made my pick for Baltimore, I said I thought he was going to have about 120 yards rushing, because I really thought they would actually ride him a lot, especially with Lamar Jackson being a little banged up. And you could see that early on. I think eventually Lamar Jackson kind of realized he's got to put that to the side and go out and make plays for this team, or else they weren't going to win this game. But early on, you could definitely see there were times where Lamar Jackson would roll out and he would just stay in the backfield and keep his eyes downfield rather than tucking it and running it. Lamar Jackson's not 100%. So I thought that they really would hand the ball off a lot more to Derrick Henry. But 68 yards, they limited him to less than 100 yards. They did what they needed to do. I mean, the way the season has gone for the Ravens this year, that should have been a Bengals win last night. Like, honestly and truthfully, that should have been a win for the Bengals. But the play of Lamar Jackson in the second half, I mean, this guy is a play that should have been, what, like a loss of 20 on the play. It ends up being a gain of 10 or 15. Throws the game-winning touchdown to Rashad Bateman. He doesn't even have a foot on the ground when he lets the ball go. He completely elevates himself to make the throw. Just ridiculous play. And like I said, I really do feel like Lamar Jackson was kind of in that situation where he knew he was going to have to put the team on his back. He was going to have to be the one to go make the plays. Because up until really kind of late third quarter, heading into the fourth quarter, they really were very stagnant on offense. They only had one touchdown in the first half. It was a 14-7 game at halftime. They come out, quick three and out, and then all of a sudden, one play from the Bengals, a pass across the middle to Jamar Chase. Jamar does the rest with his legs, and it's 21-7. And you're like, oh, are we about to see the Bengals pull away and win this game? And then that very next drive for the Bengals, they fumble the football, and it sets Baltimore up in an opportunity. Baltimore puts it in the end zone, brings it back within one score, and then we hit the fourth quarter where, I mean, Lamar just played out of his mind. His fourth quarter numbers alone, this is just the fourth quarter, by the way, 197 yards and three touchdowns. So if he threw for 290 on the entire night, and 197 came in the fourth quarter, that means heading into the fourth quarter, he had less than 100 yards passing. Majority of his stats came in the fourth quarter. He put that team on his shoulders last night. Lamar Jackson proven why everybody is talking about him as the NFL MVP for this season. Ravens get blown out in that game last night if it's not for the way Lamar Jackson played. The Bengals still had an opportunity to win. I don't understand the decision to go for two. I get, and it's an aggressive play call. I get that. You want to try to win the game. I get that. But you were looking at a situation where if you just kick the extra point, it's 37 seconds left in the game. More than likely, you're going to go into overtime. Why are you trying to push the issue and go for it? I know, again, the NFL overtime rules being what they are, if they would have done that and given the ball to the Ravens to start off overtime, Ravens go down and score a touchdown, the game's over. And the Bengals have already suffered a loss to the Ravens this year in overtime, right? Baltimore beat Cincinnati in Cincinnati earlier this season in overtime, 41-38 on a field goal. So I can understand the idea and the concept of thinking about going for it, right? But actually going for it in that situation to me is, it's a bit ridiculous. I wouldn't have done it. I would have just kicked the extra point. I would have played for overtime, and I would have gone out there and trusted. Because here's the thing. Outside of the fourth quarter, if I'm Cincinnati, I'm looking at this game and I'm saying outside of the fourth quarter, we dominated in that game, especially defensively. This Baltimore offense could not do anything. Lamar had less than 100 yards passing going into the fourth quarter. Derrick Henry had less than 100 yards rushing in the entire game. Defensively, we were very strong in this game outside of the fourth quarter. And then Lamar Jackson flipped that Superman switch and started playing like the MVP that everybody expects him to be. So I would have just played for overtime and trusted my defense to get me one stop if Baltimore gets the ball first. Get me one stop, get us the ball back, because then after that it becomes sudden death, where all we've got to do is go get in field goal range. If you can stop them, then all we got to do is go get in field goal range, kick a field goal, and we can reverse what happened in game one of this series earlier in the year. We can reverse that and get back to them with a field goal overtime win of our own. I don't know. It's one of those things where, and look, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about with Florida and Tennessee. Why didn't Billy Napier go for two? Because they ended up losing in overtime. It's kind of the nature of how this is going to work. And it's how this works in sports, right? If a coach does go for two, why the heck would you go for two? If a coach doesn't go for two, why didn't you go for two? Especially if they lose the game. Now, if Joe Burrow would have completed that pass and they would have converted that two-point conversion and they would have won 36-35, oh, we would have all woken up this morning going, that was a bold move, Cotton, but it paid off. Big win for the Bengals. But it didn't, so now we're going to criticize. We're going to look at it and we're going to go, well, why did you do that? Because it just doesn't make any sense. Right? That's how it works in sports. You're a sports fan. I don't need to tell you that. You're listening to The Glass Half Full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Do appreciate you tuning into the show. I am Jordan Glass. If you want to be a part of the show, you can definitely do so. 850-623-1330. Again, that number, 850-623-1330. A couple of other things from last night's Thursday night game. Both quarterbacks kind of dinged up. We talked about Lamar coming into the game. He's been dealing with some knee and back issues. Kind of kept him out of some practices over the last couple of weeks. But Joe Burrow, even a little banged up in the second half of that game, he took a hit after releasing a pass and kind of was flexing his arm and his wrist again. And I know if you're a Bengals fan, you're going, oh, no, not this again, right? You just got him back. He's just starting to get into a good rhythm with guys like Ja'Marr Chase. That's the last thing you need. So it definitely don't really seem like it was something that is going to be anything too serious for him moving forward. He stayed in the game, didn't miss a play, continued to play. So I just, you know, it is one of those things. I think it speaks to just how not only talented but strong-willed both of these quarterbacks are, that they were able to play banged up and play at the level that they did. I mean, both of those, both made a case for MVP last night. Say what you want. I know the year's not going well for the Bengals. Maybe the numbers aren't necessarily matching what they have been in the past. But Joe Burrow can play quarterback with just about anybody. And he proved it last night. So when people wonder, oh, is it worth to keep Joe Burrow as your starting quarterback for the Bengals because of all the injuries? Yeah. Look at last night. 34-56, 428 yards, 4 touchdowns. It's worth it. Trust me, it's worth it. Even in a loss, it's worth it. Some other news from around the NFL. Christian McCaffrey, he is set to make his NFL season debut as they play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this Sunday. He has not played this entire season. He didn't even play preseason. He's been dealing with Achilles tendonitis, right? So he's been having some issues with that calf and his Achilles. And it just still is something that was an issue for him last year. And he still kind of, he managed to play through it last year, but this year it's been too much for him. He had to go on the IR. They finally, you know, a couple of weeks ago put him on the 3-week practice schedule to where you got to practice for 3 weeks with no issues. That has happened. They had a bye week this past week. They feel comfortable. Kyle Shanahan has come out and said, look, we're not going to push him too hard, but if he's ready to go, we're going to want him in there. And I think it seems like he is ready to go. So expect Christian McCaffrey to make his season debut against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this Sunday. So if you've been one of those people on fantasy that's kept Christian McCaffrey on your bench for this exact reason, just waiting for him to come back, you might want to keep an eye on this situation, because if he's ready to go, I would put him somewhere in your lineup, even if he is at a flex position. And not necessarily at the running back position, but a flex position, just to where he can help you get some extra points, because he is chomping at the bit and ready to get back. Again, Kyle Shanahan said they're not going to put too much on him, so do expect limited touches. But if he is in there and you have him on your fantasy team, I would definitely put him at least at some position. Even if it is, like I said, at a flex, still, he's going to get you some quality points for sure. While he was out, Jordan Mason did a great job. Let's not let this happen. Let's not let Christian McCaffrey come back in without giving Jordan Mason his flowers. He did a phenomenal job keeping this run game up, because the run game didn't really drop off. Even when Brock Purdy was a little banged up, they didn't have George Kittle. They didn't have Debo because, you know, Debo, remember, he had pneumonia and he was in, like, the hospital for a few days because of that. So when they didn't have him, when they didn't have George Kittle, and the passing game really kind of dropped off for the 49ers, Jordan Mason did a nice job of keeping that run game going and really was kind of one of the driving points of this offense for the 49ers. So we got to give him his flowers for sure and you know, credit him for the job that he did in the relief role for Christian McCaffrey. But with Christian McCaffrey coming back in, it does add a little bit more to this offense. I think it's going to open things up a little bit more for Brock Purdy, because what happens is the defense has got to play a little bit more straight up and honest now, right? Jordan Mason did a great job. Like I said, I'm not trying to take anything away from him. But with the way Christian McCaffrey runs after catching the ball or being handed the football, screen passes are very dangerous with him in the game. So you've got to be careful on how you're blitzing and where you're blitzing, because Christian McCaffrey will take a quick little screen pass at his own 15, and before you know it, he's running across the goal line on the other side of the field for a touchdown. I mean, he's just as good in the passing game for the 49ers as he is in the rushing game. And it adds an extra level, it adds an extra element to this offense for the 49ers. So I think it's going to be big getting him back in there. It's going to open things up for Brock Purdy. It's going to allow him to be able to find his weapons like Debo and George Kittle and guys like that a little bit more. And it's also going to open up, look, Brock Purdy's not a mobile quarterback, but he's a guy that can hurt you with his legs if you give him the space. And having a guy like Christian McCaffrey in there, they're going to have to keep an eye on Christian coming out of the backfield. They're just going to have to keep an eye on Christian, period, if you're the opposing defense. So I think, honestly and truthfully, it's going to open up things for Brock Purdy to maybe take off and run and pick up some first downs with his legs as well. And again, another added factor of having Christian McCaffrey back, he's a pretty good blocker too. Not a lot with the game of football that guy does poorly. All right? That's why he's who he is. And he has done everything he has done for the 49ers in the last couple of seasons he's been there since they acquired him in that trade back in 2022. So big news there for the 49ers to get him back, even if it is limited snaps, just trying to slowly work his way back into it. Let's take our first time out of the show. We'll be back with more of a Football Friday right after this. It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola.
Get ready, Alabama fans, for the Roll Tide Radio Show, Friday mornings from 10 till 11 a.m. right here on ESPN Pensacola. Get caught up on the latest Crimson Tide updates, game analysis, and upcoming matchups. Time to talk some football, Alabama football. The Roll Tide Radio Talk Show, every Friday from 10 till 11 a.m., brought to you by Cantomat Ace Hardware, right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 a.m., 99.1 FM. Roll Tide!
Hey, if you own or manage a business in the greater Pensacola area, how would you like to get your business in front of men ages 25 to 54? Well, that's who listens to ESPN Pensacola.
Hey!
Okay, men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah.
Excuse me?
And Jill. Whether it be a radio ad with ESPN Pensacola or online through ADX Digital, we can come up with the best solutions for you. Get in front of men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah and Jill.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com, click on the sales opportunities.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Getting back into it on a Football Friday here at the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. I am Jordan Glass. We've got Austin Price joining us now in studio. He's been hopping in the last couple of Fridays, hanging out with us before he takes over with Roll Tide Radio coming up at 10 a.m., so stay tuned for that, especially if you are a Bama fan. But right now, I want to address Florida fans right now, because yesterday something happened right after we got off the show here, so I didn't get a chance to really kind of mention it, but I wanted to bring it up, and I tried to get this particular person on the show today, but they're dodging me. We'll get them on. Of course, I'm talking about Florida Gators athletic director Scott Strickland.
Wow, you're actually trying to get a hold of him to have him on.
I sent him an email. He did not respond. I was like, "Hey, would you mind coming on?
Answering for what you've done."
I think he kind of knew, because he probably, after the announcement he made yesterday, got a flux of those invites, if you will. Obviously, we're talking about the vote of confidence he gave to Billy Napier, and basically saying that Billy Napier will be the head coach at the University of Florida in 2025. Now, Austin, I'm going to read you some numbers here, and I'm going to tell you that this is a Power 4 blue blood, blue chip program.
Yeah.
And this is the numbers of their head coach in the 2.5 seasons he has been at that school. 15-17 as a overall record in 2.5 years, 2-12 versus major rivals. And let's see, where do I go from here? 0-2 versus his in-state rival that he plays at the end of every season. 0-3 versus his biggest in-conference rival. Does that coach get a fourth year?
Yes, he does. I told you last week, Georgia.
Okay.
I said the loss to Georgia would not be a backbreaker for his career in Gainesville, and I think Florida proved why. I think you look at the fact that they were up at half.
Yeah.
It was a tied game, I think, at the start of the fourth, and they had some quarterback issues mid-game. Georgia had to pull away just to win by 2 touchdowns. And I feel like you have to look at what the standard was for Florida coming into this season. The standard was bless their hearts. They were lucky to go 4-8.
Sure.
And you really thought, oh, wow, you know, this guy sucks. He's really going to bomb this year, and then he's going to get out. And when you saw the blowout loss to Miami, you saw the convincing loss to Texas A&M, mm-hmm. people really thought, oh, he's done for. And then Texas A&M gets ranked. Now we're 9 games into Miami season. They haven't lost yet.
Right.
Then you've got the competitive loss to Tennessee. Then you've got the competitive loss to Georgia. And now you're looking at this guy and you're like, okay, is he some terrible head coach or is he now starting to make a climb and he just got a bad hand with quarterback issues and a brutal schedule? If you give him another year, his QB room is fine and his schedule isn't as merciless, dare I say, I honestly think they're looking at this thinking maybe we could get back to winning.
You know what? I agree with you on that. I agree with you.
How's that for glass half full?
I agree. That is definitely full right there. I agree with you on all of that. The only problem I will have is from the perspective of seeing what Florida fans are saying. So for Florida fans, close losses aren't good.
Yeah.
They don't want to have they're not for the moral victories. They're not going to, well, we lost to this team close. They don't want to hear that. Trust me, I've had that conversation with some before in the past. They don't want to hear it. But also, next year they do have to go to Miami. They do have to go to A&M. So there are some tough games. But like you said, the schedule is not nearly as bad as it was this year. I think for Florida fans, and this is actually why I wanted to have Scott Strickland on the show, and hopefully it's something that can be worked out later on in the season or, you know, maybe even after the season is over. I wanted him to have the opportunity to see or to say what he sees behind the scenes. Because Florida right. fans, those numbers I just gave you, and I gave you those because that's what Florida fans are seeing. That's why Florida fans are so upset. They're seeing the 15-17 in 2.5 years. They're seeing the 2-12 versus their biggest rivals, teams that Florida used to run the table on, like Kentucky. Florida went 30-something years straight with beating Kentucky.
That's another thing that helped them, I think. They just killed Kentucky this
year. True. Now, granted, they did lose to Kentucky for the first time. That streak was broke before Billy Napier was the head coach. So we're not putting that streak on him.
Yeah.
But still, it's teams that they're expected to either compete with or just blow out in general that they're not doing. And that's what Florida fans are getting upset with. I will say this. I did a little digging. I talked to some people yesterday that are part of the media down there in Central Florida. And they said that there are stipulations to this. That this was just not a Scott Strickland, and this was another reason why I would have Scott on the show. This was not just a Scott Strickland called him in and said, hey, buddy, you're doing a great job. We're going to give you another year. Don't worry. All these fans that want you fired, don't worry.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
This was a meeting that Scott Strickland called him in and said, look, we're going to give you another year, but here's what you have to do. You either agree to this or we'll figure something else out. And some of those stipulations were he has to hire an offensive coordinator and relinquish play calling duties to that OC. So he's got to bring in an offensive coordinator, which is something he hasn't had at Florida. Play calling is an issue with him. I mean, when you come out of a game against Miami after Miami already embarrasses Florida the way that they did, they're over there talking to their recruits and high-fiving and dabbing up their recruits after that loss.
Yeah.
That's not a good look for Florida. Then you get the defensive coaching staff the following week going, yeah, you know, we watched their film and we figured out they only have about 6 plays that they run. So we, you know, scheduled our first drive. We scripted our first drive on defense for those 6 plays. And sure enough, exactly how we said they would run the plays is how they ran them. We were actually surprised that it turned out to be that way. So the play calling has been very vanilla, very predictable under Billy Napier. And that is a big issue with the fan base. So if he does go out and hire an OC, if he does give up play calling to said OC, and of course he's also agreed apparently to make other coaching changes as far as getting rid of certain people on his staff. And I'm going to say right now, Chris Couch needs to be the first one on that list that goes. Their special team coordinator, because I don't know what he's been coordinating, but it's not the special teams there in Gainesville. Anybody that's watched a Florida football game can tell you whether it's been too many guys on the field, a bad snap on a field goal, any of the miscues they've had on special teams. Majority of the miscues Florida's had, especially the last 2 seasons, has been on special teams. So I think a change is needed there. If Billy Napier makes these decisions and makes these changes, I mean, look, we saw Dabo do it at Clemson, and what happened when he did it at Clemson?
Yeah.
The switch finally flipped for them. They end up getting to national championships. They end up winning a national championship. The only problem with that is the coach that Dabo got rid of to make that change was Billy Napier. who was the offensive coordinator at the time at Clemson. So yeah. That's not helping the argument from Florida fans either. They're going, because you bring that up and they go, okay, yeah, but he was the guy that they fired to get good.
You got the reject.
Yeah.
Here.
So, I'm all for it, and another reason I'm all for it, and Florida fans should be all for this and okay with this, you're going to lose DJ Lagway if Billy Napier wasn't the coach. Even if you would have fired him and you would have gone and gotten Lane Kiffin, which is who the fan base wanted, DJ Lagway would have entered the portal, and you wouldn't have had a quarterback. I mean, you would have had, Aiden Warren, the transfer from Yale that played last week against Georgia. And I put that in quotes when I said it the second time here in the studio, because I'm pretty sure he wasn't a transfer from Yale. I'm pretty sure he was like a sophomore from Nice High School, and they just went and pulled him and was like, there you go. We need somebody. Go in there and play. Because, I mean, he did his best. But when you've got to put your body into a throw as much as he did just to make it go on a 5-yard out route, you're not a quarterback for the University of Florida.
Yeah. The standard isn't there.
You're not a quarterback for the University of South Florida. It's unfortunately not what it is for him. But yeah, I think giving Billy another year, I think my only issue here is that the recruiting class right now is at 51st.
That's rough. And that's a problem that as a head coach, that's going to linger regardless of most coaching changes that you make.
Even with him now, them knowing, because you can make the argument that, well, there's going to be some recruits that don't stick around because they're not sure if he's going to be there next year. They're going to decommit because they're not sure if he's going to be there next year.
Yeah.
Well, there's also going to be a lot of recruits that are decommitting because of the way things look on the field. And right now, when you still have to go to Texas this weekend, then you have two home games against LSU, against Ole Miss, before closing out against Florida State. I'm seeing another 5-7 record, which if I'm a top recruit in the state of Florida, I'm seeing what Miami's doing right now. What school do you go to? Do you go to Florida and be 5-7 with Billy Napier like they have the last 2 years? Or honestly, truthfully, the last 3 years, because his first year there, they were 6-7.
Yeah.
Or do you go play for Mario Cristobal in South Beach and potentially compete for a national championship like they're doing this year? Or even if I'm an offensive lineman and I go, okay, I've got to go sit at Miami, I'd have to sit at Florida, but here's Mike Norvell telling me I can start right away as a true freshman at Florida State. I mean, there's things working against Billy outside of just, you know, wins and losses as far as recruiting goes inside the state of Florida, let alone outside. Because, I mean, if he tries to go anywhere outside, he's got to compete with Dabo and even Shane Beamer now, who's doing a great job, especially coming off of this big win over A&M.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, he's out there recruiting hard. Then you go to Georgia. Well, that's Kirby's land. We know that. Then you go to Alabama. And, I mean, let's be honest. Nick Saban still has an office there on campus in Tuscaloosa. If you think they're not taking recruits by Nick Saban's office to say hey to the former coach, it's like.
Of course they are. Florida's a cutthroat state for recruiting.
The thing with Alabama there with that is Nick Saban is basically, have you ever been to a Ripley's Believe It or Not museum?
No.
So when you go to a Ripley's Believe It or Not museum, before you walk through and you check out all the quote-unquote oddities that they have on display, you see a holograph of Robert Ripley sitting behind his desk and he talks to you. He tells you a little spill of what you're going to see in the museum.
Adds to the whimsy, right.
Exactly. That's Nick Saban now at the University of Alabama. They bring recruits by. He's sitting behind his desk, and he goes, hello, recruits. Welcome to the University of Alabama.
Here's all my championship rings. Here's why it's so glorious to come here and play here.
Exactly. So it's going to be tough. The original point, getting back to it, was it's going to be tough for Billy Napier to recruit. He's going to get 2025. But I think there is a stipulation here that Scott Strickland probably didn't mention in that, and that is that 2025 is probably that year for Billy Napier. That if it's not working again next year, he's done. And I don't think it'll be a situation to where this year we kind of were talking and speculated of it'll probably wait till the end of the season. I think it'll probably be mid-season next year. If they're 1-4, 2-3, something like that to start off the year again, he's done. They're going to move on because you can't continue. You can't come out and say that your program is committed to excellence and be okay with numbers like that.
Yeah, settling for that.
Yeah. You can't settle unless you're just completely just blowing up the football program and going, you know what? We're going to be a basketball and baseball school now for men's sports. Bye, guys. Football's over. As a matter of fact, we're just going to take down the swamp. We're only going to play in about 10,000 people.
God.
I mean,
I mean, as a Steelers fan, I can kind of relate to that. People always talk about Mike Tomlin doesn't have a losing record, and I'm sitting here like, when did that become the bar for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yeah.
You know, don't finish in the red. So, no, I get it. I get it that Florida fans are upset. I just don't think this was the year to fire him. I think it was too much stacked against him. Next year, he won't have any excuses.
All I'm saying is, knowing Florida fans the way that I do, Shelly Myers and Dan Mullen's wife, I don't know her name, so I apologize for not knowing her name, but they could not go to Publix and buy groceries when they lost one game in a season. That's just how Florida fans are. They're a spoiled fan base, but there's a reason why they're spoiled, much like with an Alabama or an Ohio State. They're used to winning. Yeah. That's what they're used to. Let's take a quick timeout. When we come back, we will actually look at week 11 of this college football season and check out some of the big-time matchups, including one with the Florida Gators, as they are going to head to Austin to take on the Texas Longhorns. That's coming up next right here on ESPN Pensacola.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM is your home for the NFL primetime games on the radio. That's Thursday night football, Sunday night football, and Monday night football. Also, be sure to catch the early games Sunday mornings when the NFL is traveling overseas. So how do you know which games we're carrying? Easy. Just follow us on Facebook / ESPN Pensacola. ESPN Pensacola. All sports, all the time.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Getting right back into it here on the Glass Half Full on this Football Friday. Again, if you want to be a part of the show, 850-623-1330. 850-623-1330. Got Austin Price in here with me. Austin, real quick, coming back, that music reminds me. Are you going with Aerosmith and Run DMC when you hear Walk This Way, or is it just Aerosmith? Like, which version do you go to?
I think of the original, just Aerosmith, because the intro to the Run DMC version has a bit more of a DJ-like sound.
Yeah.
So I think when I just hear the standard standard guitar or the standard beat at the beginning, I just think of Aerosmith.
I got to go for the music video, though. I got to go Run DMC and Aerosmith.
Oh, yeah.
The
music
video,
absolutely
fantastic with Steven Tyler busting through the wall to the other side
where
Run DMC
had, like,
is.
Yeah, because they had adjacent studios for some
reason.
Yeah,
a little metaphor there of busting through the wall, of combining rock and rap. I believe, for the first time, was that song.
That was a pretty big one. Yeah,
yeah. Anyways, let's get to sports here, because this is a sports station, not a classic rock station. But let's get to some of the games happening this week in college football. We've got a pretty decent matchup selection this weekend. Nothing too major. There's a couple of great games. We'll start Purdue, Ohio State. Ohio State has got Indiana next week. They're coming off of a tough win on the road at Penn State. Some people might call this a trap game. I call it a tomato can. Not even going to be close.
I gave Purdue some love when they were supposed to be playing Oregon on a Friday, and it's like, oh, well, Purdue plays good against the number two team or something. Had the whole spoiler maker hype. Didn't they get shut out 35-0? They're not going to beat Ohio State. No chance.
Not even close. Miami on the road against Georgia Tech in this one. Miami, they pulled away last week, a big second half by Cam Ward against
Duke.
Duke, that game, I don't know why I want to say Louisville. That was Clemson. I'm getting
those. Oh, no, that was somebody else they struggled with.
Yeah, that was another week. But I don't think they have an issue this week. They should win this one pretty handily.
I think it's another game where they pull away. The Duke game looked a lot closer than the, 22-point spread implied. I will take Miami to win by a couple of possessions, but they don't beat up on Georgia Tech.
Yeah, it's that defense for me. That defense is allowing those teams to stay in this game when really, honestly, and truthfully, they should be blowing out all of these teams that they've been playing the last few weeks. Florida at Texas. We were talking about this one a little bit during the break. I'll go ahead and let you start on this one as far as what you think is going to happen.
I believe in Florida. I believe that they are a physical team. They looked good against Georgia. They looked good against Tennessee. They show up for big games in spite of everything we've said about them already. And Texas has struggled at times. I think they slip up, but they end up pulling away. And I'll take Texas 35-17.
See, my thing with Florida's defense is the last few weeks they have showed up. Pretty much ever since that bye week that they had after the A&M loss, they have showed up and they have played very well on defense. And one of the reasons is they've simplified a lot. They've simplified a lot of their coverage, a lot of the pressures that they bring, because they do have some younger guys playing on the defensive side of the ball because of injuries or just them being the better player at that position. The unfortunate thing for Florida this year is they have not been able to be consistent with it, right? Played a really great half on defense against Tennessee. Second half kind of let up a little bit. Vols ended up coming in, pulling away with that game, and winning it in overtime. Kind of the same thing last week with Georgia. Granted, the quarterback situation played a part in that because your offense really wasn't keeping the ball long. Defense got worn down more. It allowed Georgia to create bigger opportunities, especially with the run game. Suddenly, you started seeing a run game that really Florida was doing a good job of stopping early on in that game. They started, that offensive line for Georgia started leaning on that Florida front seven. They started picking up chunk yards. I just don't know if Florida's defense is enough to stop them in this game against Texas.
It
on
won't
the road
be for
in
four
Austin.
Quarters.
Yeah, not for four quarters. And with a banged up DJ Lagway, that's what's going to have to happen for the Gators. I think, I honestly, I don't even think this game is going to be close. I really don't. I just, DJ Lagway's banged up. You really don't have another quarterback on your roster. Again, no offense to Aiden Warren, but you just don't have another quarterback on your roster outside of DJ Lagway. So let's say first quarter, DJ Lagway tries to take a step, reissues that, you know, re-aggravates that hamstring injury, and he can't go for the Gators. It's going to be a long night for them there in Austin. I don't know. I don't have... You have a little bit more faith in Florida than I do, I think.
Well, and maybe it's because you're a Florida fan, so you've kind of seen more of the good and the bad.
Yeah, and I know some people that cover the program down there in Central Florida, and I hear the things that are said and the way things are going down there. And, yeah, it's just
– I might have some blissful ignorance here.
I wouldn't mind a little bit of that if on myself. But I don't know if Florida has enough, honestly and truthfully. Georgia, number three – at number 16, Ole Miss. This is one of our biggies for the weekend. Lots of playoff implications here. Ole Miss at 6-2. They are currently sitting just outside the top 15, actually, at number 16. They're going to be a little bit ticked off in this game because I honestly and truthfully feel that Lane Kiffin has this Ole Miss team feeling they are the best two-loss team in the rankings right now, and they feel like they should be in that spot ahead of Alabama. I don't know if I agree with that, but that's where Lane Kiffin has this team thinking and has their mentality going. Chip on the shoulder in this game. It's in Oxford. Ole Miss can score a lot of points. Carson Beck throwing interceptions. Yesterday on the show, a good friend of the show, Ronald, texted in, and he let me know he's going with Ole Miss outright. And you know what? I'm going to go with Ronald on this one, too. I'm going with Ole Miss at home to get the win over Georgia.
I think you can attribute some of Georgia's struggles to it being a big rivalry game, and maybe no disrespect to Florida, but maybe Georgia was looking ahead. I'll tell you this much, though. I think Ole Miss is the SEC's Penn State. They have good years. They never get over the hump. I feel that Georgia has kind of hit that Alabama level of success, and we saw it at Texas earlier this year where, you know, yeah, we'll struggle, but when a big game comes up, we're going to make an example. I think we see that here. It's going to be a competitive game. But I think Ole Miss crumbles. I think Georgia outlasts them, and they're a better team, better built team, more physical team, and I think a better coach team. No offense to Lane Kiffin, but that's the way I look at it. I think Georgia, all of that's going to shine late, and they win 27-20.
I think, yeah. I mean, look, if Georgia wins this game, it's not going to surprise me. But I think the thing with Georgia and their struggles this year is that it has seemed a little bit more than what we've seen the last couple of years. To where, like you were saying, Georgia's at that level now where we'll struggle against, you know, lesser opponents, but when it's a big game, we'll step up. But it was a big game to start off the season against Clemson, and it took them a whole half to get going in that game.
Well, yeah, but that was the opener.
They went into Tuscaloosa. They struggled in the first half against that game. They struggled against Kentucky. They struggled against Florida. There's just been too many issues of them struggling this year on the season for me.
Well, 2 years ago, they struggled with Kent State and Missouri before going 15-0 and winning the national title 65-7.
That is a fair point. That is a fair point. I'm still going Ole Miss in this game. I want to see an upset there. I just want to see an upset because – honestly, that's just going to throw everything into chaos because then you've got a two-loss Georgia team. You've got a two-loss Alabama/LSU team, whoever ends up winning that game this weekend, and you'd have the two-loss Ole Miss team, and that's just going to give the committee a nice migraine. And I'm all for that because it just makes it more interesting. Michigan on the road against Indiana. Again, we talked about Ohio State and how they might be looking ahead to Indiana. We don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be happening for Indiana this week when they take on Michigan. They're going to be locked in and focused, and they better be because this Michigan team – actually not playing bad football the last couple of weeks. I know, yes, they got beat by 21 by Oregon, but who's not getting beat by Oregon these days, right? I mean, even Ohio State got beat by Oregon.
Yeah, I think Michigan can be scrappy because they're obviously a well-built team on paper. The problem is when they, as you said, when they play a bigger, better team, they get exposed. They're on the road here. Indiana, dare I say similarly to Georgia, has shown up to every game we expected them to crumble in. And yeah, I gotta take Indiana, putting up 56 on Nebraska, scoring 47 unanswered against Michigan State on the road. I just think they are a better coached football team. Cinetti is coach of the year. I think he's already locked it up. And I think we'll see another reason for that this weekend. I got him over the Wolverines probably by a couple scores.
Okay. Yeah, I could go with that. I could see Indiana winning by a couple of touchdowns in that game for sure. Let's see. Iowa State at Kansas. Iowa Ooh. State, this is going to be an interesting one. Yeah, especially there in the in this conference. Iowa State's got to win out, including the conference championship, if they want to have any hope. They're sitting at number 17 right now. This is going to be a tough one on the road in Kansas.
I think they win, but the spread was pretty narrow, and I agree with it 100%. Iowa State is feeling pretty darn deflated right now. Kansas is struggling. They're 2-6, but they're at home. Lance Leopold's a great coach. I think this is a trip-up game for them. They bounce back. They do win, but it's going to add to the weakness of their resume. It's going to do them more harm than good because they are just really going to prove, hey, we're not that good of a team.
I'm actually going to go out because of exactly what you said. The Kansas coach is a good head coach. Kansas at home. I agree with you. It is going to be a trip-up game. I'm going to disagree with you, though. I think Kansas gets the win at home. I think Iowa State is done after this week.
Wouldn't be my blow.
I think it's one of those things to where, you know, the loss that they suffered, what was it, last week or the week before?
To Texas Tech last
week.
Yeah,
it was just a tough loss for them. It's going to be kind of one of those deflating losses that just kind of affects them through the rest of the year. I like Kansas at home in this one. 23, Clemson on the road against Virginia Tech. Clemson, another one of those two-loss teams. You got to win out and hope SMU slips up and you can get into the conference championship.
Yeah, I look at Clemson. This could be another loss where they're feeling deflated going to Va Tech after getting beat up at home by Louisville. Va Tech's playing for a bowl. Lane Stadium's known as being a brutal place to play. Ooh, I'll take Clemson, but they struggle a lot.
Clemson did not do a good job last week against the run against Louisville. Virginia Tech has got a couple of guys on their team that can really run the football. At home, Virginia Tech, the running game is going to be the difference in this. Virginia Tech is going to be able to rely on that and keep it close. But I think talent-wise, Clemson's just the better team. If they just show up and they're prepared, they should win this football game. But it's going to be close because of the rushing game for Virginia Tech and how that Clemson defense struggled last week. The Hokies are really going to try to angle in on that run game. How about Army going on the road to North Texas? They're undefeated. They still have Notre Dame coming up. But they're at 25, maybe a little disrespectful for some people out there. But Army on the road against North Texas, I think it's probably another blowout for Army.
I disagree. I think because this North Texas team is 5-3. It is in Texas. It's in Denton or wherever the heck they play. Army, they're looking at these polls. They're looking at, hey, I got a bye week next week, and then I got to face Notre Dame. They are not focusing on North Texas at all. I do feel that they probably believe they're being disrespected, but if we've learned anything about the committee, they don't give a hoot about some cute underdog story. They're going to hold you accountable for what you've done. And I think this game kind of validates their stance. I think Army wins, but I think they struggle a bit.
Okay. All right.
They're looking everywhere but at the mean green right now.
You know what? It's a very valid point. They definitely could be a little distracted by that. Let's jump around to some of the other games here real quick. We've got Florida State taking on Notre Dame. You can actually hear that game. I only bring that game up to plug that you can hear it on our sister station, News Radio 92.3.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course, because you do the afternoon show over there, so I figured I would plug them. It is the word bloodbath comes to mind.
You know, interestingly enough, I've been a huge critic of Florida State. Who hasn't? But I take them winning this.
We got it recorded.
I take them losing this game. But interestingly enough, I actually have them covering the spread. Last I saw, the spread was like 26.5. I've got them losing by 24. I had, I think, 37-13 earlier this week.
Oh, I don't. I'm going Notre Dame outright and against the spread.
Really?
I'm Notre Dame is going to win this one big. Florida State can't manage to score 18 points in a game.
Yep.
Let alone 20.
Yeah.
Notre Dame is just going to run all over this team. It's not going to. touchdown Jesus is going to look away because of how bad it's going to be. He's going to just turn his head, and I can't see this anymore.
I think 37-13 against Notre Dame, I think that's pretty good if you're Florida State. From my perspective, you just lost 35-11 at home to an unranked North Carolina.
For Florida State, yes, that's going to be good. But I guarantee you Notre Dame is going to want to impress the committee any chance they have.
Yeah.
This is a good opportunity for them to do that. They're going to run up the score.
Make an example just like they did of Navy.
Yep. I think they will score 50 points just like they did against Navy.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I think Marcus Freeman's going to keep the pedal down the whole game. He's not going to pull it off at any point. And, yeah, I don't expect this game to be close at all. Alabama, number 11 on the road against number 15 LSU. LSU sitting back there looking up at Alabama going, you sons of guns. Y'all don't deserve to be in the playoff. We deserve to be in the playoff, and we're going to prove it this weekend.
Yes, if you the loser of this game, I firmly believe, is not making the playoff. You'd be at best 9-3. It's at LSU. I don't like the lack of discipline that this Alabama team has. I'll be talking about that in under an hour from now. But yeah, this is a big game, and I'll go ahead and tell you it'll be just our little secret because my co-host is out there. But I got LSU winning 31-23.
All right.
I think this is a brutal place, brutal time of day for Alabama to go at night, Death Valley. And as you said, I think LSU is just really gunning for them. Not that Alabama isn't, but I think they kind of get to a point where they overlook, you know, that's what gets you a loss to Vandy, even when Vandy is good. And I think when you've got egotistical, undisciplined players, that's going to shine in a place like Death Valley, and you're going to lose the game as a result.
I'm going to agree with you on the results of the game. I do think LSU wins this game at home. It's night game in Death Valley. I can see Jalen Milroe having a late turnover that cost Alabama this game, whether it's a fumble, it was a strip sack or something like that, or he just throws an interception. My other thing here on this is, for Alabama fans that are cussing us right now for picking LSU, I'm about to get back in your good graces. Alabama can win this or lose this game and still make the college football playoff.
Here's why.
Because Heather Dinich pointed this out on the college football playoff reveal Tuesday night, and it's a very great point. And I talked about it on the show yesterday. In the last decade, the committee has put 13 three-loss teams in the top 10. So we've had 13 teams over the last 10 years that are three-loss teams get in to the college football playoff. And I'm going to tell you right now, if Alabama is one of those three-loss teams that's right there at the cusp, you don't think the committee's not going to go, yeah, go ahead, push them on in.
Oh, no. We learned last year that they will.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Now, look, if LSU is a three-loss team, they don't get in. I'm saying Bama gets in as a three-loss team because they're Bama.
I think that could definitely happen. I think the pool's just a bit too deep this year, just deep into the season. And Alabama's going to have one truly statement win. And it was going to be from months ago. I don't know.
That their losses would be to, let's see, Vandy.
Barely ranked.
Barely ranked, but for Vandy this year, by their standards, good football team.
Yeah.
Tennessee, who is a playoff team that's ranked inside the top 10. And then if they lose this game to LSU, it would be LSU, who would be more than likely what most people expect, another playoff team.
You played four good teams, and you went 1-3 against
them. Hey, I'm just saying, I'm not on the committee. I'm just saying I know the way they think, and this is – we've seen it before. Let's take our final timeout of the show. When we come back, we will have your UWF Argo update with Will Kennedy for this Saturday's game, and we'll also look ahead to some NFL game, plus your headline roundup. It's all coming up next.
Will Kennedy here with another UWF football preview for you. The Argos continue to roll. Five straight victories now, coming off a record-setting win on the road at Erskine last week with a 70-0 final, the most points ever scored in a game by the Argos, and the largest margin of victory. Things get a little tougher and a little tighter as the Argos return to the home field at Penn Air Field this week to host North Greenville for a pivotal Gulf South Conference game. The Trailblazers have had an up-and-down season, but they always seem to play the Argos tough, and Coach Caleb Nobles knows his team will have to be at their best.
You know, played up there. They've been down here. There have been some interesting and close games, including 2 years ago here when we got the first look really at their quarterback, Dylan Ramirez, who's still with them. He was a freshman then. He's pretty good. He'll present some challenges for us.
He is a good player. He does some really good stuff, and he uses his legs a little bit to kind of create some time, and he knows who his good playmakers are. 15's a very good running back, good player. One of the best probably players in the conference, if not the country, number one, Dre Williams, who we've talked about. We got to know everywhere where he is no matter what. And you got to know when he's at the water cooler, what he's drinking over there. what kind of cup it is, so things like that. We got to know exactly where he is. And Dylan does a good job of finding him and getting him the ball in space. So we know we got to have a good plan for those guys and keep them in check.
This is the final regular season game for 2024. It will be Senior Day, as the Argos will honor their senior players before the game. It is also Salute to Service Day, honoring our local military. Kickoff is set for 2 o'clock. Tailgating starts as early as 10. The gates will open at 1 o'clock, and we'll be on the radio with the pregame show for you at 1:45, and the kickoff just a few minutes after 2. You can listen to it right here on ESPN Pensacola. I'll talk to you again soon, and as always, go Argos!
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Getting back into it here on a Football Friday. Just enough time left in today's show to go over our headline roundup, where we take a look at the top headlines in the world of sports for the day. Lamar Jackson throws for 197 yards and 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter to bring the Ravens back from a 14-point deficit against the Bengals. They get the 35-34 win on Thursday Night Football last night. Jacksonville likely without Trevor Lawrence this Sunday versus the Vikings. Looks like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to be donating $10,000 to the family of Buccaneer and Baker Mayfield fan Connor Barba, who was 18 on his way to the game in Kansas City last Monday night from Norman, Oklahoma, got into a car accident and passed away. So they're going to be donating $10,000 there. Mets owner Steve Cohen set to meet with Juan Soto's agent. Lakers signed Bronny James to a South Bay G League team contract. And Dodgers pitcher Clayton Kershaw vows to crush rehab and make a full recovery for the 2025 season after 2 surgeries this past season. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll have more of the Glass Half Full for you coming up next Monday. We'll recap all the action from this weekend. And if you missed any of today's show, check out our social media pages. We'll have the podcast version posted a little later on today.
You're listening to ESPN.